there is very good evidence that the ADC non-linearity, as we measured, we have measured the ADC response with hot data on the sky, and we have implemented that in the simulation, and we recover the same kind of apparent gain variation that what we reconstructed.
I'm saying let's take it step by step. But
we try to get something on 10%,
maybe 90%. Okay, maybe it's out
10%. There could be other stuff, yeah. But we have to peel the onion layer by layer.
Try and get sensible results on the noise, and then we'll deal with the measure problem.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks for the invitation to present you something. I will repeat maybe something that George has already shown and getting a little bit deeper in the gory detail of the data analysis. And I will focus mainly on the HFI analysis as George has done. So I will remind a few of the characteristics of our observation that are relevant for polarization and give you information on the systematic that we are fighting against currently for preparing the next data release. So you probably all know that we are observing the sky making large circles from the L2 point. George showed you that we have a focal plane with detectors that are sensitive to polarization. We call a ring a stable pointing period, so the time for during which we the satellite observe a circle on the sky, and typically a ring lasts 40 minutes. And the point that is most important for polarization is that around the sun, the satellite draws a cycloid curve below and above and below the ecliptic plane. And the circle have an opening angle, a boresight angle of 85 degrees on average. So in the end, each detector will, for most of the sky, see the sky with two different orientations, but not so different. The orientation is defined by the excursion we make above and below the ecliptic plane, which could have been 10 degrees, but we decided to set it to 7.5 degrees. So except for the two ecliptic polar caps, we are observing with one detector the sky with only two orientation. And this is why we have to combine detector with each other to reconstruct polarization. So just a very brief reminder that we have a complex processing. To show you an example of the noise spectra we have on 143 GHz detector. And we hope to have an E frequency somewhere there to be able to use the destriping approximation that we are using to make the HFI maps. And this stable pointing period is also one of the tools that we use to estimate the statistical noise in our data, because we can split each stable pointing period in two halves and compute maps and all that independently for each half, and then you make the difference, you should find zero, and plus noise, plus eventually systematic. So this is a test of the statistical noise at time scale of the order of this ring duration, of course. So this is an example of such test where you have here the 143 GHz temperature map. This is the heat count map, so it shows you that we have a very inhomogeneous sky coverage. There is a very high coverage in the two ecliptic polar cap where all the circles intersect. And otherwise, it's pretty flat. So this is for the nominal mission, which lasts for two complete coverage plus something. That's the reason why there is this funny shape. And when you do two maps for the two halves independently, you take the difference, you observe this, and you see there's a correlation between the pattern you observe in this map and the heat count, which is the propagation of the noise. And if you use this to correct for the different time spent or coverage, you end with this kind of map, which is rather white and which is showing that basically the noise is almost white, not completely as George showed. So again, I repeat what George already wrote. We measure with one detector a combination of IQ and U. And of course, if you are interested in polarization, you are interested in Q and U. And to reconstruct Q and U, you have to take differences of two detectors with two different orientations. But even that only measures a linear combination of Q and U. So you have to combine several detectors or several observations with the same pair with different angles to reconstruct Q and U. But with the small difference that we have for most observations, we in fact have to combine at least four detectors to have a real reliable measurement of Q and U. Otherwise, we have to we have large errors on the common part of Q and U. We have large covariance. And of course, the challenge to this is the fact that the polarization signal is low with respect to CMB and even lower with respect to the CMB dipole. There are four grounds, and we have to rely for this for the orientation and the polarization efficiency. We rely on the ground measurement that are not so bad, but we have not yet checked them precisely in flight. And of course, as was already heavily discussed, any miscalibration of your detector will induce the leakage from the intensity to polarization, which is what we are fighting against for different systematic, but it's the same type of leakage. Before going into the systematic, I show you also something which is close to what George showed. It's the noise level, the statistical quote-unquote noise level that we have on the map that were showed by Mathieu and the ESLAB conference for E and BB. And you have a comparison of the level of noise that we have on our different maps and compared with the noise that Mathieu reconstructed from the WMAP maps. So you see each color corresponds to a map. We have the CMB channel 143-217 that have a much lower noise than the other channel. That's what we expected. You see that the LFI are slightly below for this nominal mission WMAP. Of course, they will have much more data and it will get probably better. You also see, as George showed, that the spectrum are not totally flat because of the time filtering and time response deconvolution that we apply on the bolometer response for the Planck data, especially for the HFI data. The other radiometer data are much flatter.
The reason the left and right plots don't look awfully completely identical, maybe you've already explained this, but is it just because it's hard to measure the lowest multiple noise level?
You mean why it increases?
Well, not just if I try to overlap those two plots, left and right, they don't look the same. Exactly, but it's mostly dominated by stop happening at low levels.
Yes, it's the difference between the E and BB spectra is probably statistical first. Okay. You mean that? Yeah, but as George showed, when you have the striping, you introduce such kind of odd uneven. Yeah.
E and B are exactly the same.
In the ideal.
In the ideal case. Yeah. And as it's written above, it's preliminary. So it's just to illustrate that we have a low noise level. But so as was already mentioned, the main systematic that we are fighting against in polarization come from gain variation, calibration mismatch, and also bandpass mismatch, which are all essentially affect the large scale on the sky, so the low multipole, because what was under looked before launch, in addition to the CMB anisotropy, we have a CMB dipole, which is much larger and which leaks into your beta when you are not calibrating perfectly. So this makes a big leakage source, and it can also be used to calibrate and to cure it, but it's you have to calibrate very well your data to remove it. There are also other systematics that are being studied. This orientation and efficiency of the detector is probably subdominant, and for the moment we do not address it, but what is also a concern for part of the collaboration is the far side lobe effect, because far side lobe may affect calibration, so it may enter in the calibration mismatch estimation. And there are also different, they are not uniform on the sky, and when you combine all detectors, you may end with polarized features due to far side lobe. As we said earlier, we have we compute analytic model, quote unquote, of the far side lobe with optics calculation, with GRASP model, and we try to match that with the flight data, but it's a long process first to compute the beam and to compare them with data. It's not something trivial, and it's a lot of people are working on that at the moment. So George already explained this kind of plot where we in the HFI processing paper we showed the kind of level of uncertainties that we have in polarization. The reason for this feature is basically because it's the dipole that leaks in the data, and it makes this kind of power law in the systematic. The width of this band comes from the dispersion in the calibration that we observe in the real data, probably a little bit pessimistic. And as you can also see, this plot were made with a mask over the galaxy, but some of the galaxy was present. That's why we measure a level of bomb pass leakage, which is increasing with frequency as the galactic signal is increasing. So at the moment, we are close to the reionization bump, but we have to work on calibration mismatch to cure that. Something that I wanted to show also is this plot where the average band passes for the HFI data are plotted. Just to tell you that they are non-trivial, there are a lot of wiggles in these plots, which are average for all detectors, and each detector is different from the other. That's why there are band pass leakage correction, of course, but it's coming from ground measurement, and it's hard to check that on the sky. So it's why it is a complex work, and again, why it is not yet done. And the other thing that you can notice is the vertical lines, which are the CO lines, so the CO in our galaxy, is radiating at these precise lines. And of course, they will induce a signal in the Vic detector, which depends on the relative high of its band pass at this frequency. So it was slightly unexpected before launch that we had so large deviation in some local region of the sky from one detector to the other due to CO. But in the end, we used that to measure the CO emission in all these three bands by comparing the observation for each detector in the same calibration. It's making the component separation a little bit more complex than previously thought, because you have to take care of each detector separately to separate CO or to estimate the CO effect on average on your map. And since it's different from one detector to the other, you have a CO temperature to polarization leakage in your polarization map if you do not account for that. So it can be forgotten in the CMB analysis if you apply a mask on the intense CO emitting region. But for galactic studies, it has to be taken into account also. So, coming to calibration, the calibration for both instruments comes from the solar data. Yep. Yeah.
So is that something that for example, the program would move forward? And you were just talking about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you were speaking about the match between the pair.
Yeah, we are trying to match each detector with all the other ones. Because when we reconstruct polarization, we have to combine more than one pair. We have to combine at least four detectors. So. Yes, because we have a low angle variation for one pair over the sky. This is red line, right?
Is that specifically about the leakage of non-CMB sources?
Yeah.
CMB?
Yeah. And this is, of course, it depends on the sky coverage you include in this analysis. I don't remember what sky we used to do that. But if you reject, the more you reject galaxy, the less you will have bandpass leakage affecting your signal. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, this is dust, essentially dust.
At
low multiple, 100 gigahertz is not so bad. Yeah, it's a log scale. Yeah. So, back to calibration, we measure our calibration on the solar dipole for both instruments, and we did I think a thorough job to estimate the calibration accuracies, which were reported in that paper. And we try to compare different detectors with each other, looking for calibration differences, different frequency with each other to, again, try to track calibration differences. You see the level of differences that we observed. And we also compared the LFI and HFI channel that were closest to each other, and I think the difference is of the order or better than 0.5%. To all these accuracies, you have to add the uncertainty on the calibrator, which comes from the WMAP measurement, and the limitation on our accuracies come first, or not first, but we have some limitation due to our handling of the far side lobe, which recuperates a part of the energy that we have to precisely estimate in order to calibrate our data. And this for HFI is thought to be relatively small. The fraction that is lost in the far side lobe is of that order. So you have to square that for the power spectra. It may leave also a small feature in L-dependent feature because there are some trick that compensate this at the lowest multiple. And the largest limitation is the non-linearities of the ADC. So the the point is that we have non-linear ADC, so the step of the ADC are not equal with each other. And this combined with the fact that we modulate our signal, so we have a modulation of the signal, and we measure 18 points on this modulation, on this modulated signal, and the DC level is slowly varying in time. So you are slowly scanning some region of your ADC response with time. The amplitude of the modulation is quite high, and you are not always on the same ADC digit, so you end with some variation in time of your signal, which at first order looks like a gain variation. So what we are doing now, and what we have done for this release, is to try to estimate a gain variation. So we have this kind of plot. George showed you another version. This is for all the 100 GHz detectors. We try to look for relative gain variation by trying to solve this equation both for a gain for the sky and for the offset in the destriping. So it's a little bit more complex game than destriping. To be more technical, we linearize this equation around the constant gain approximation. And we end with this kind of measurement that we implement in the data to correct for this. And we are estimating one gain per ring, right? And since we believe this estimate is slightly noised, we smooth it with a 50 rings period. So what we use is one gain per, let's say, 2 days. So it corresponds to this curve.
Is it the 2-day level
that goes? Yeah. It's the smooth version that is possible. Yes. Is set by the solar dipole. So what we estimated by looking at the residual we see on the sky as time changes is that this correction is good to about 0.3% for, you know, the level of remaining variation, or better than 0.3%.
So when you say that only below, do you mean including 217 gigahertz?
Sorry? Yeah. Below and including 217. Yeah, yes. At 353, this kind of code doesn't work well because we rely on the approximation that in each pixel, the sky is constant. And as the galaxy becomes brighter, it induces gradients in the pixel, which will then perturbate the solving of the system and induce artificial gain variation. So we have to mask the central part of the galaxy for all this process, but at 353, we would have to mask too much or to get a strange result. So we chose to forget it. And it means that at 353, we have a variation in the calibration of the order of 1 to 2%, which is still there in the data. And of course, what we are doing now is to try to improve over this, or to get rid of the need for computing gain variation by measuring the ADC response. The last word is gone, but and using this measurement with hot data to correct the data before the processing. And to do that, we need both to know the ADC and the modulation pattern that is also changing in time. And we also need to take into account other systematic effects coming from the instrument that will make changes in this modulation pattern, like the infamous or famous Fourier lines.
This is not a generic nonlinearity for this type of ADC. This is for each ADC has its own.
Each ADC has its own individual pattern that we have to measure, and that we have tried to measure as best as we can with hot data. So when the HFI bolometers were hot, quote unquote, at 4K, they see more or less a Gaussian signal, and we measure the reconstructed signal, and the difference between the Gaussian and this signal is used to measure the width of each AD system. So then we can slowly change the setting of the electronic change to span a larger width on the ADC response, but it's a long process that has been going on since January last year when the helium-3 fuel was exhausted. I think for the modulation we try to span all the range, but but we did concentrate on the central part because these were ADC which have 16-bit with sign, and the most the step that is much different from the other is the central step, which is a classic thing for this kind of ADC.
So the error is most prevalent at the low signal scale.
Yeah. And there are repeating patterns at 64 bits and multiples that we tried also to get as much as possible. So just a plot showing what we have measured as calibration differences from one detector to the other at 143 GHz. We make cross spectra, and using these cross spectra that are plotted here, we can try to fit the constant to minimize the dispersion. So the kind of constant that we recovered are shown in this table. It's the maximum of these values. So you see that the George, don't know why you mentioned the 1 to 2% effect on the gain, but it's not that high, I would say. Thanks to the work we did to correct at first order for the ADC variation. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I also listed here. Yeah, it's like 0.3%, but what was forgotten in this pre-launch paper was the dipole leakage.
So even the pre-launch thing is not as good?
Yes, I think the dipole leakage was forgotten. Well, dipole is CMD also. So I repeated also here some numbers that we get when comparing one frequency to the other to show that for the CMB frequency, they are indeed quite small. And as George said, we are also measuring polarization at larger L or lower scale, and things look great. You already showed this plot. I also showed the cold spot, hot spot stacking that we did. One line is simulation, the other one is real data. It's not so bad. Yeah. Not yet, I'm afraid, because you have this dipole leakage will perturbate also your T spectrum because they are in the data. And so in there, we have a hard job to extract polarization at low L. We have some limitation from this calibration stuff. We are working on the ADC nonlinearities. But there is already galactic science done at 353 GHz. There were talk at this SLAB conference. And with more data and hopefully correction for the ADC and maybe more precise calibration, we hope to do good in less than 1 year.
When do you think you come up with the galactic polarization results papers?
I think the paper are being written and reviewed by the editorial board, so it should come within a month.
Do you think it's a month, 2 months, or do you think it's 12 months?
August in France is a little slow. It's hard to do.
Just the
fine? No. There'll be a whole range of
stuff.
But the criteria is that you know they don't require science.
Do you see, will you be able to put bounds on polarization of dust even at the cleanest regions of the sky? No bounds, you certainly put bounds, but do you see at the clearest regions of the sky? I mean, can you answer? I don't know if you can answer this, but at 353.
If you're thinking in terms of information, on the
One of the paper will give the polarization map for all sky.
So let's thank Olivier.